Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Brian is a faculty research fellow in the Department of Chemistry at Pacific Lutheran University, who consults with several food and beverage companies. In 2023, Lux Life magazine named him Consultant of the Year and presented Brian with a Global Vegan Award for researching ways to convert agricultural waste into feedstocks that can be used to make alternative proteins. Welcome, Brian. Will you describe to listeners how you learned to love tea?
Historically, I've always had an interest in, you know, herbs and teas and different ways to sort of ingest healthful compounds over time. And I've always loved drinking tea as a kid. I always fondly remember my mom brewing a cup of tea in the morning and then, you know, we sharing that. So to me, you know, even now I share that love with my wife, who's more of a coffee drinker, I will say, but we definitely can agree on tea as sort of a place to meet in terms of, you know, caffeinated drinks. There's just so many memories I have about tea and tea drinking. And, you know, as I learned more and more as an amateur, you know, the different varieties, the processing steps, and a lot of the history, it continues to fascinate me. And there's just so much research and literature about tea. You know, as a scientist, I can just kind of get locked down on, you know, endless reading and papers.
Let's start by asking, is tea safe to drink?
I believe so. You see so many benefits from tea. Tea is still quite safe to drink. And there's definitely ways to make it safer. But I don't see as much of a issue from my perspective as someone that works with clients developing tea beverages, knowing where the sources are and understanding sort of the supply chain logistics.
There is an effort globally to be more judicious with regulations like the new Strengthen Organic Enforcement Rules for Organics. We have witnessed several incidents where certified organic teas turn out not to be. One of the dead giveaways was pesticide residues. Just this last week, Yogi pulled almost 900,000 tea bags because of traces of pesticides. Talk to us about the role of food inspection, the sensitivity of detection for the many different types of residues, and in general, how we should evaluate the tea we drink.
Ultimately, it can be challenging to sort of do batteries of tests over and over again. It's a function of cost, and you want to have good statistics as far as, you know, the batches that you're testing and in the batches that you're not testing and hope that you're able to catch, you know, the residues. I think for the most part, you know, there's definitely levels and grades of testing. You know, you can go all the way to the very, you know, very high cost, high analytics, and, you know, you're able to find and pinpoint pesticide residues, you know, down to the 0.1 part per million. You know, but that's not something that is, you know, commercially practical, right? So you have to sort of know where your levels are, understand, you know, and target those levels and ensure that, you know, you're doing the best that you can in terms of having a very robust testing protocol and, you know, routine of doing the right types of tests. There's a lot of different types. There's even the immunoassays that are used to sort of evaluate pesticide residues. And, you know, there's a lot of different chemical tests that can be applied, but it's just a matter of, you know, choosing the highest priority pesticides that are most likely to be found on different varieties of the teas. I think that as a consumer, of course, pesticide residues are concerning. I think to me, the food safety aspect of tea is that there's not really much to be concerned with as a downstream concern. I think there's a lot of levels and situations where people are able to track a lot of the major issues. And then as a consumer, for the most part, I think that the pesticide residues don't end up reaching to the level where a consumer is concerned. So I'm glad to hear that Yogi T was able to catch that and you know, conduct that recall in a timely manner. I think that's usually the situation that we find ourselves, where we have a fairly robust food industry and food system where these sort of recalls can be caught before consumers are consuming them beyond a level that severely impacts health long term.
I'm interested in the difference in accuracy between wet laboratory testing and the new AI-driven cloud-based portable spectroscopic analyzers. You can now take a sample of tea or coffee and put it in an analyzer or on a light table where sensors monitor reflectivity, density, and color. The internet-enabled devices immediately beam the data into a cloud, which matches it against accurately calibrated images to create profiles or fingerprints. These digital fingerprints are then downloaded into your laptop or cell phone 3 minutes later with statistically validated comparisons that enable you to comfortably say, oh, this T, which is right in front of me, is fine because data points A, B, C, D, and E align. Not as reliable, perhaps, as a wet lab test, but is it good enough?
To me, I think there's good enough, which is sort of a routine test that you do, you know, on batches, you know, on a weekly basis, and something like that is cost effective. But, you know, there are always going to be errors. And I think a test is only as good as how it's developed. And, you know, in these types of spectroscopy imaging technologies, they definitely aren't always perfect, and there's definitely range of accuracy and precision. So, you know, having that and then coupling it with, you know, more precise, more techniques that have better precision in terms of instrumentation, and then sort of the numbers in terms of the statistical relevance of them, having that together is better than relying on one or the other, because one is just way too costly to do on a routine basis, whereas the other is not always accurate enough. So you kind of rely on the easier tests routinely, and then, you know, you kind of do like a spot check, you know, one every 3 months, once a month, something along those lines, something that allows you to sort of catch the potential errors downstream.
One interesting application is at a factory. Smallholders often bring in small quantities of tea, say 6 or 10 bags. If that tea's tainted, the entire batch, all 2,000 sacks of tea processed in the factory that day, will have a problem because of 6, 8, or 10 40-kilo sacks of raw leaves with too much pesticide poured on. Under discussion is a simple but effective test at the factory door. Say we're India, looking for one of 39 chemicals closely regulated by EU importers. Do a profile print test at the factory gate while weighing the tea. You know what chemicals are suspect, and if there is a trace, the factory will have avoided adding it to the export workflow. We're not talking about a high cost per test. We're talking about paying perhaps $100,000 for the most sensitive equipment. The cost of individual tests isn't significant. Purchasing cloud-based identification as a service for a monthly fee is a lower-cost option. Purchasing the equipment makes sense for larger factories servicing a cooperative with 4,000 to 5,000 smallholders, or a Botley factory that processes 50 tons of tea a week.
Oh, gosh. You know, I've definitely been trying to keep up with how these technologies work out. And I think one of the challenges is that at the end of the day, you're still working off of some kind of reference point with those technologies. They have to have something that is eventually a wet lab basis. And so I think in over time, as there's more data and more that those numbers get crunched, the accuracy will improve significantly. But that's more of like a use by use case scenario where, every user has to sort of like input their information and that is used to sort of train the model. But there's definitely scenarios where an AI system, hallucinates or, creates numbers out of thin air. And that's, I think the key is, it's trusting, but verifying, as they say, and there's always going to be a need for wet lab basis testing just because you don't want to rely 100% on a complete automated process, especially one that, can get so complex and become so bogged down by potential errors that propagate or something that, for whatever reason ends up giving you numbers that don't reflect reality. I wish I could say to trust that completely because it would be very affordable, in the long term, and that'd be a huge cost cutting action. But I think there is always going to be room for some kind of wet lab analysis eventually. You sort of use that as a gate, again, just routinely doing your analyses, using that as a way to sort of flag down potential issues. And then, also trying to evaluate the pesticide residues or the chemical residues with a wet lab when there's a serious concern. It's sort of like just prioritizing, how bad is it? And what's the potential for this to really get mucked up? And how much precision do we need at the end of the day?
I'm a big Simon Sinek fan. I like to hear people explain why they do what they do and what makes them feel like their mission is satisfying. Brian, what do you like most about being a food safety guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story for me. I think it really starts with back in after I graduated from college, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I decided to take a year off and I ended up walking across the country from California to Louisiana. So that was about 2,000 miles, about 6 months trip. And along the way, I really was trying to be very bare bones about it. And, I'd be eating oatmeal in the morning. I'd be, having trail mix and I'd be eating 3,000, 4,000 calories. But it was like eating cardboard every day. And I kept this whole idea of the food's safe, but it doesn't taste as good. How do I get closer to a situation where you get food that's trustworthy and safe and consistent, but also tastes good? And it was just something that just stuck with me. And from that time on, I kept coming back to that idea, the idea of, how important is flavor to the human experience of food? And, again, you got to balance that with food safety aspects, but being able to do both really well is such a joy because when I work with clients, and they run into an issue, whether it's on the food safety side or the flavor side, it's always nice to be able to, take out my little toolkit of, different processes and potential, components and really sit there and break down, what's actually happening. And especially in the beverage space, and especially with tea, again, I'm just an amateur, but it's so much to learn as far as, what are the chemical processes involved and how does that ultimately impact the downstream effects of, am I tasting something astringent or is there a bitterness or, how am I experiencing this tea as, increasing my focus and concentration? There's always those biological aspects. And so, a lot of the big things right now for a lot of people who come to me are, energy drinks. But a lot of people want to move away from sort of the hard hitting Red Bull type drinks or the monster drinks. And they're looking towards tea and concentrated forms of tea as sort of a clean label ingredient and product. So that's always fascinating because I have to take ingredients that, don't necessarily mesh very well. You have nutraceutical compounds and better for you compounds and high concentrations of caffeine, and they're all very bitter. And then I got to play around with how do I make this into a ready to drink or a powdered mix? And, which is very different from my experience of very authentic teas in a tea room, right? Like, it's like, but how do I like capture that essence, right? How do I capture that experience? You know, even if it's only a minute part of that, in something that maybe is a little more utilitarian. So I think that's my why, is always chasing what is it about humans and flavor, and how do we experience, you know, enjoyment, and how do we take something in that is very healthful, but also something that really makes us experience something emotive and touch on some memories in the past.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.